The Republicans rolled out their own economic plan up in Lansing a couple of days ago, and as a centerpiece of that was an income tax cut, cutting the rate. You know, like the way we had it when we had the income tax cut last year that was then rendered temporary by Democrats. One of those that was involved in this debate about whether or not the tax cut was intended to be permanent or not was the gentleman who is our next guest, the former governor of the great state of Michigan, Rick Snyder, joining us. Governor, good morning.
It's great to be with you, Guy. Good morning.
Yeah, you've kind of got a unique perspective on this since it was your signature on the bill that inked the automatic tax cut in the first place back in 2015. Just take us inside and, you know, into the way back machine for a moment about what the thinking was at the time.
Sure. It was absolutely intended to be permanent. So the thinking was, we were trying to work on an arrangement to raise funds for roads, to make our roads better. I didn't want to borrow money like the current administration has. It was like, let's pay for what we do. So we said, let's put a package together to raise some revenue. And so you're asking more money from our citizens. So the legislative leaders came and said they wanted a tax cut at that time. They said, let's bring the income tax rate back below 4%, which had been for many, many years below 4%. And I said, you know, I'm an old accountant. That's not fiscally responsible yet. I said, I agree with you in theory, but it's not the right time. So I said, what I would do is come up with a formula to say when we do well enough, when we have surpluses in government, we shouldn't keep that money. We should give it back to our hardworking taxpayers. They can use that money to pay for milk, bread, gas, all the important things in life. And so I'm up for that. So I built actually an Excel spreadsheet and looked at the forecast and said, okay, here's a formula to make it work. And in my model, it was going to kick in about 2025, 2026. Well, we did better than that. It kicked in, and it was intended to kick in every time we had too much money. Because again, why should you take money from people that can otherwise use it for better purposes in their life? And all of a sudden they came and said, well, that's just temporary. Well, that's not what was really intended.
And then one tough nerd reached for his Excel spreadsheet and said, see, here,
you have received.
This is the proof right here.
Yeah, so I think it's kind of ironic because I did the spreadsheet myself. It wasn't a big staff thing, so I can tell you.
Governor, you mentioned the ongoing legal dispute in your op-ed surrounding the permanency of the tax cut in the cases now, I believe, with the state Supreme Court. What do you believe is at stake for Michigan residents, especially when you talk about the integrity of legislative agreements if the court doesn't uphold this tax cut as permanent?
Yeah, I mean, it presents a challenge, Lloyd, when you look at it. I mean, the interesting part is that the attorney general, the governor, the current governor, nobody asked. They just said they didn't want it to be permanent, where it was clear the intent was to make it permanent. The kind of wild story was I was enjoying the draft last night, which was awesome in Detroit, and our pick was all wonderful. And all of a sudden, I get another text, and it was from the sponsor of the bill with the tax cut. And he goes, nobody asked me either. And he goes, it was permanent. So it's frustrating in that regard because – it's frustrating for us, but more importantly, think about all our taxpayers. Government's grown dramatically in Michigan over the last few years, and have we seen a lot of value from that? How have costs gone for our citizens in terms of the cost of living? And isn't it important we recognize that tax dollars aren't free? They have to make sacrifices and other things in their life, like those, you know, important things they have to buy every day, their utility bills, everything else. And shouldn't we have them keep those dollars unless we can clearly show it has value? And when you have a surplus, does that show you really need that dollar?
Governor, you believe that they are interpreting the intent of what you signed in a way that you did not intend it. How should they be going about this?
They should make it permanent. And it was really a formula to kick in gradually over time. To say that as we had continued to have excesses or surpluses, and you hope that would be the case with a strong economy, it would gradually push down the rate because to make Michigan more competitive, to make it more attractive for people to stay here and to come here, I think the 4% mark is an important one. So over the long term, one of my goals was to say, if we could afford it, let's get the income tax rate back down because it makes Michigan more exciting to live in terms of being affordable and more attractive for our young people to stay.
So the breaking news, and this just happened at 8:30, the federal government released the inflation rate report that the Fed prefers, and that we're still moving in the wrong direction. You presided over one of the more robust economies we've seen in Michigan in a long time. What is this doing to us? This is like a tax that we never asked for.
Yeah, and well, you said it well, Guy. It's essentially your costs are going up and you're not getting an additional benefit for it. So it's a backhanded way to say you're losing resources with no return. In many cases, that was the idea of this tax cut. You know, if the government has more money than it needs in terms of what's right in front of it, it's like, why should they ask for that tax dollar from you?
Yeah. Well, and also here we're getting taxed twice because we're dealing with higher prices, and then the bitter pill that we've got to swallow is higher interest rates when we do borrow money.
Yeah, so people can use those dollars and look at the kind of marginal projects that get added when government has a lot of money. They'll find a way to spend it quite often. And is it really being spent on things that are really that material or important or making a difference compared to, you know, paying for the everyday important things of life?
Yeah. I had to smile the other day. I saw a tweet from the Michigan GOP. It appears that Pete Hoekstra does have the keys to the Twitter kingdom back in his hands.
Yeah.
That went off the rails.
Yeah.
It got a little crazy there.
Some of those tweets. Whoa.
But my GOP is back in the fundraising business, and apparently they're beginning to restore some of the trust that was lost under the previous leadership there. But I know you've been hard at work just fundraising specifically to try to take back the House. How's that going?
Good. We had another large reporting period where we're doing well. We actually have good cash on hand, but you don't take it for granted. We need to get the majority back. Michigan's been going backwards over the last couple years. And if we can win the House back, we can bring more balance to Michigan. And I think that's an important thing. So I've been very active helping raise funds and get people reengaged. A lot of people have been disillusioned about politics, and they want to associate with, you know, good people, rational people that want to have a positive vision for Michigan. And that's what we're focused on. My work is focused on with the Michigan House Caucus. So that's exciting. But I want to give a shout out to Pete. I appreciate him doing that to help bring the party back, because it's important that, you know, there be good, strong political parties that are thoughtful and doing good things. And the interesting part there is Pete and I ran against each other. If you go back to 2000,
I remember.
Yeah.
And I learned to respect him then. He's a good man, a good person in his heart. And so I'm glad to see him taking on that role. We became friends after the election. And it's good to see the hard work he's doing. So I hope he can, and I believe he will, rebuild the party in a positive, constructive way.
Yeah, and there's some trust building that has to happen there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Governor, you know you're our cybersecurity person. Your thoughts on TikTok and the possible banning of TikTok?
There is a real concern there. With TikTok being owned by a Chinese organization and then having strong ties to the government. That is something that is a concern in terms of different messages, disinformation, a lot of concerns there. So I think they're looking at it appropriately in this particular case.
Can it be defeated by cybersecurity skills and talents like yours?
Well, it's not just the cybersecurity piece itself, guys. The concern is the disinformation piece about how they can slant messages, about what messages you get. So that's not really a normal hack. That's more, you know, kind of
surveillance,
taking what should be good information and sort of repurposing it or changing the message around in a, you know, a way that's not good or constructive. And there's so much of that out there.
Oh, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal in the past 2 days have had some great pieces that anything that is in the least bit problematic for China is suppressed to the nth degree on TikTok. It's not an open forum and it's not an honest discussion. And you're right. That's the thing that there is no fix for.
I just wanted to know if you made Excel spreadsheets for all the draft prospects.
Well, I got to, Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell and Sheila and all those wonderful people, Ron Wood, they've done a fabulous job over the last few drafts. And that's like, I don't know if I could do a good enough spreadsheet.
But you're available if need be.
I'm available if they want. Yeah.
Good to know.
Okay.
Structuring their spreadsheet, but go for it. I mean, these guys are rock stars.
Well, they are. And, you know, being the leaders of this quest to bring this here, they've done a great job. We can't say enough good things about the Lions and what they pulled off over the past 24 hours. Governor, thanks so much.
It's great to be with you. Have a wonderful weekend.
We sure will. We're going to talk to the guy that's really got to be basking in the glow of this as well, and that's Claude Molinari, our Visit Detroit CEO. That's next on JR Morning. Automotive Views with Jamie Butters is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org.
The UAW's victory in Chattanooga was historic, no doubt, but it really wasn't a surprise given how narrow the union's previous defeat was, and that was at the height of a corruption investigation that ultimately sent two UAW presidents to prison. As I often said last year, Sean Fain became UAW president with no base, no machine, and no mandate, but in leading the union to rich contracts last year, he built a base and a machine. And his self-appointed mandate to organize transplants and startups is the right one for the shrinking union, which can also help level the playing field for the Detroit Three. Getting a Detroit-like contract in Tennessee may be a challenge. Winning the next vote at the Mercedes plant in Alabama may be tougher than it was at VW. But Americans' view of organized labor is as positive as it's been since the 1960s, and the UAW is not letting the opportunity go to waste. With this week's Automotive View, I'm Jamie Butters, host of the Daily Drive podcast and executive editor of Automotive News.